When was the last time you looked in the mirror and actually liked the person staring back at you? Not just your appearance, but your choices, your habits, your life. Too many people can't answer that question honestly. And that's why they feel empty, no matter how much love they get from others. Here's the hard truth. The most important relationship you will ever have isn't with your partner, your friends, or your family. It's with yourself. Before the messages, before the validation, before the attention, there's you. And if that relationship is broken, nothing else in your life will feel right. You can have the best job, the most exciting romance, and all the material success in the world. But if you don't love yourself, it will all feel temporary. Self-love isn't selfish. It's survival. It's setting a standard for how you deserve to be treated and refusing to negotiate it. It's learning to have your own back when no one else does, to protect your energy when the world tries to drain it, and to believe in your worth even when you're surrounded by people who can't see it. In this episode, you're going to learn how to love yourself more than anyone else, not in a way that closes you off from the world, but in a way that makes you stronger, calmer, and more unshakable. Because once you stop abandoning yourself, you'll stop accepting less than you deserve from everyone else. 1. How to build a loving relationship with yourself. When was the last time you felt proud of yourself? Not for what you achieved, but simply for who you are. Most people don't think about this, and that's why they end up chasing love from everyone else while neglecting the most important relationship in their life, the one they have with themselves. You can't escape yourself. No matter where you go, what you do, or who you're with, you take yourself with you. And if that relationship is broken, nothing else will ever feel right. The truth is, self-love is not an accident. It's not something that magically appears when life is going your way. It's something you deliberately build, just like any strong relationship, with effort, attention, and consistency. Think about how you treat the people you deeply care for. You listen to them, you show them respect, you give them patience, and you forgive their mistakes. Now be honest, do you give yourself that same level of care? The hard reality is that most people speak to themselves in ways they would never speak to someone they love. They replay their failures over and over. They call themselves names when they make a mistake. They hold themselves to impossible standards while giving endless understanding to others. If you want to build a loving relationship with yourself, you have to change the way you talk to yourself. Replace, "I can't believe I did that," with, "I'm learning and improving." Replace, "I'm not good enough," with, "I'm still becoming the person I want to be." The language you use shapes how you see yourself, and your mind believes the words you repeat. But self-love is more than just positive self-talk. It's about keeping your own promises. If a friend constantly broke their word to you, cancelled on you, and didn't show up when you needed them, would you trust them? Probably not. And yet, so many of us do this to ourselves. We say we'll start exercising, then skip it. We say we'll stop talking to someone toxic, then let them back in. Every broken promise chips away at self-respect. You rebuild that respect by keeping even the smallest commitments, getting up when you said you would, finishing the task you started, honoring the boundaries you set. Another key part of this relationship is spending intentional time alone, not scrolling endlessly, not drowning in noise, but actually being with yourself. This can be uncomfortable because when you're alone, there's nowhere to hide from your thoughts. But the truth is, you can't love someone you don't truly know, and you can't know yourself if you never spend time with yourself. Go for a walk without headphones. Take yourself out to eat. Sit in silence and ask yourself what you really want out of life. And just like in any other relationship, forgiveness is essential. You cannot have love without forgiveness. That means letting go of the mistakes you've been punishing yourself for. It doesn't mean pretending those mistakes were okay. It means deciding they no longer get to control you. Every time you forgive yourself, you open space for growth instead of guilt. Over time, these actions change everything. You start to feel like you have your own back. You stop chasing validation from people who can't give it to you. You stop accepting less than you deserve. And something amazing happens. You begin to move through life with a quiet confidence. You speak more clearly, you walk with more purpose, and you no longer feel the need to explain your worth to anyone. A loving relationship with yourself is the foundation of all the others. If you respect yourself, you'll demand respect from others. If you value yourself, you'll stop letting people treat you like you're disposable. And if you truly love yourself, you'll never again beg for the kind of love you can already give yourself in abundance. 2. Why self-love is the foundation of true happiness. What if I told you that every moment of happiness you've ever felt, every burst of joy, every peaceful sigh, has been filtered through the way you see yourself? Think about it. Two people can have the exact same life circumstances, yet one feels deeply content while the other feels constantly unfulfilled. The difference isn't luck, it's self-love. Without it, happiness is always temporary, always fragile, always dependent on something or someone outside of you. We're often told that happiness comes from achievements, relationships, or possessions. Get the promotion, find the perfect partner, buy the dream home, then you'll finally feel complete. And yes, these things can bring excitement. But without self-love, the feeling fades, and you're left chasing the next big thing, hoping it will finally fill the gap. It never does. Why? Because happiness built on external things is like building a house on sand. The moment those things change, and they always do, the entire structure collapses. Self-love is the solid ground. It's the foundation that makes happiness stable. When you value yourself, you stop looking for permission to feel good about your life. You stop waiting for others to validate your worth before you allow yourself to be happy. It's like turning on a light inside you that no one else can switch off. Even when life gets hard, and it will, you still have that inner stability, that quiet confidence that you are enough. But here's the truth most people avoid. Building self-love requires unlearning years of conditioning. From an early age, many of us are taught that our worth depends on our performance, our appearance, or how much we please others. We're rewarded for fitting in, for meeting expectations, for being good in someone else's eyes. Over time, this creates a dangerous habit. We start outsourcing our happiness. We forget that we have the power to give it to ourselves without anyone's approval. True happiness begins when you reverse this pattern. It's when you wake up in the morning and decide, I don't need today to go perfectly for me to feel good about myself. It's when you can sit alone and still feel whole. It's when you can receive love from others but not depend on it to survive emotionally. Self-love doesn't make you arrogant. It makes you free. It allows you to enjoy the highs without clinging to them and to endure the lows without falling apart. And here's the thing. When your happiness comes from self-love, everything else in life improves. Your relationships become healthier because you're no longer entering them from a place of need or desperation. You can love others without losing yourself in them. Your work becomes more fulfilling because you're not constantly chasing recognition. You're doing it because it aligns with your values. Even your free time feels richer because you're not trying to escape from yourself. You're actually enjoying being you. The mistake most people make is thinking they can skip self-love and go straight to happiness. It's like planting flowers in toxic soil. They might bloom for a moment, but they won't last. Self-love is the soil. It's what makes joy sustainable. Without it, you're always at the mercy of circumstances. With it, you become unshakable. And perhaps the most beautiful part, self-love is something you can start building today, right now, in small ways. By speaking kindly to yourself, by honoring your needs without guilt, by setting boundaries that protect your energy. Every time you do these things, you strengthen the foundation, and happiness stops being something you chase and starts being something you live. 3. Setting boundaries without feeling guilty. Why is it that the moment we try to protect our time, our energy, or our peace, we start feeling guilty? Why do so many of us say yes when every part of us is screaming no? The answer is simple but uncomfortable. We've been trained to believe that putting ourselves first is selfish. And so, we sacrifice our well-being for the comfort of others, thinking it makes us good people, when in reality, it just makes us exhausted, resentful, and disconnected from ourselves. Boundaries are not walls. They are doors. Doors that you have the right to open and close based on what is healthy for you. Without them, life becomes chaotic. People start expecting more than you can give, and you start giving more than you can handle. Over time, you lose your sense of self. You become so used to meeting everyone else's needs that you forget you have your own. And here's the cruel part. The more you give without boundaries, the less people value what you give. Think about it. The friend who's always available at any hour, the co-worker who never says no, the family member who constantly sacrifices their own plans. These people are rarely respected more because of their constant availability. In fact, they're often taken for granted. Boundaries don't push people away. They teach people how to treat you. The guilt you feel when setting a boundary isn't proof that you're doing something wrong. It's proof that you're breaking an old pattern. That uncomfortable feeling is just your mind adjusting to a new way of living. You've been programmed to believe that your worth comes from how much you give. So when you start protecting yourself, it feels like you're taking something away from others. But in reality, you're giving them something far more valuable. The best version of you, not the drained, resentful version. Setting boundaries also means being okay with disappointing people. You cannot live a life of self-respect and please everyone at the same time. If someone's love or respect for you depends on you overextending yourself, then it's not real love or respect. It's dependence and control. A person who truly cares about you will not punish you for having limits. Here's the truth. Boundaries don't just protect your time. They protect your identity. Without them, you'll say yes to so many things you don't want that you'll start living a life that doesn't feel like yours. And when you lose touch with who you are, self-love becomes impossible. You cannot love a version of yourself that's constantly betraying your own needs. Practical boundaries can be as simple as not answering calls after a certain hour, saying no to events that drain you, refusing to engage in conversations that are toxic, or taking time for yourself, even if others don't understand. The key is consistency. A boundary you set but constantly break isn't a boundary. It's a suggestion. The more you practice setting and keeping your boundaries, the more natural it becomes. And something magical happens. Your guilt starts to fade. You begin to realize that the people who truly matter respect your limits, and the ones who don't were only in your life because you didn't have any. You stop feeling bad for protecting your peace, because you finally understand it's the only way to live authentically. In the end, boundaries are acts of self-love in action. They say, I value myself enough to protect what matters to me. And when you live this way, your relationships improve. You start attracting people who respect you for who you are, not for how much you can give without limits. And most importantly, you stop betraying yourself for the sake of others and start building a life that feels right, not just one that looks right. 4. The power of saying no to protect your energy. When was the last time you said no without giving an excuse, without apologizing, without feeling like you had to justify it? For most people, that's rare. We live in a culture that celebrates busyness, overcommitment, and the idea that being constantly available is a sign of value. But here's the reality. Every time you say yes to something that drains you, you're saying no to yourself. And over time, those stolen moments, that depleted energy, and that silent resentment will cost you more than you realize. Saying no isn't about rejecting people. It's about protecting the most precious resource you have, your energy. You can always make more money. You can rebuild relationships. But once your energy is gone, so is your ability to show up fully in life. Without it, you can't create, you can't connect, you can't even enjoy the things you've worked so hard for. Energy is your life force, and if you don't guard it fiercely, the world will drain it without hesitation. The problem is, most people think that saying no will make them selfish, rude, or unkind. They imagine others labeling them as difficult or uncaring. But here's the truth. People who truly respect you will also respect your no. It's only the ones who benefit from your lack of boundaries who will try to make you feel guilty for protecting yourself. And that's the clearest sign that the no was necessary. Think of your energy like a bank account. Every commitment, every conversation, every problem you take on, it's a withdrawal. If you never say no, you'll eventually run into emotional bankruptcy. The symptoms? Burnout, resentment, loss of motivation, even physical illness. Your body and mind are constantly warning you when you're giving too much, but if you ignore those signals, the cost will be far greater than you expect. The Stoics understood this well. Marcus Aurelius once wrote about the importance of guarding the inner citadel, the fortress of your mind and soul. Not every battle is worth fighting, and not every invitation is worth accepting. Saying no is your way of closing the gate before an unnecessary siege drains your strength. But here's the thing. The first few times you say no, it will feel uncomfortable. You've been conditioned to believe that your worth is tied to how much you do for others. Breaking that pattern means facing the discomfort of change. That momentary awkwardness? It's not a sign you're doing something wrong. It's proof that you're reclaiming control over your life. Practical ways to start. Before you agree to anything, pause and ask yourself, does this align with my priorities right now? Will this energize me or drain me? If I say yes, what will I have to say no to in return? These questions shift your focus from pleasing others to protecting yourself. And over time, you realize something powerful. The world doesn't end when you say no. The people who truly value you adjust. The ones who don't, they quietly fade away, making room for relationships that are healthier and more balanced. When you start saying no with confidence, something changes inside you. You begin to trust yourself more. You stop over-explaining. You stop feeling like you owe everyone access to your time and energy. And you start making decisions that leave you feeling lighter instead of weighed down. Ultimately, saying no is one of the purest forms of self-love. It says, I respect my time, my health, and my peace enough to protect them, And when you live this way, you realize you're not shutting people out. You're simply choosing who and what gets to be part of your life. You're not rejecting the world. You're just making sure you don't reject yourself in the process. 5. Letting go of people who don't value you. How many times have you stayed in someone's life long after they stopped treating you like you matter? How many times have you made excuses for their behavior, convinced yourself they'll change, or told yourself that maybe you're just expecting too much? Here's the uncomfortable truth. Every moment you spend holding on to people who don't value you is a moment you're stealing from yourself. Letting go is hard, not because we don't know the person is bad for us, but because our hearts get attached to the idea of them, to the memories, to the potential, to the way they made us feel once upon a time. We hold on, hoping they'll return to that version of themselves, ignoring the reality that the present version is nothing like it. This is where self-love and self-respect collide. Because you can't claim to value yourself while you continue to invest in someone who has shown you, through their actions, that they do not. The truth is, when someone truly values you, you don't have to question it. You don't have to decode mixed signals, chase them for attention, or shrink yourself to fit into their comfort zone. Their respect, their care, and their presence are consistent. Anything less than that is not love. It's tolerance, convenience, or habit. The Stoics understood the importance of detachment. Epictetus taught that we suffer not from the loss itself, but from our attachment to the illusion of control over it. We believe that if we just try harder, give more, or change ourselves enough, we can make someone see our worth. But here's the thing. Your worth is not up for negotiation. It exists whether someone else recognizes it or not. When you let go of people who don't value you, it's not about anger or revenge. It's about creating space for relationships that nourish you instead of draining you. It's about finally having the energy to pour into your own growth, your own joy, and your own peace. And yes, there will be a void at first, a silence where their chaos used to be. But in that silence, something beautiful happens. You start to hear yourself again. One of the hardest lessons in life is realizing that some people are only meant to be part of a chapter, not the whole story. Holding on past their exit point doesn't keep the story alive. It just keeps you stuck in a plot that's going nowhere. And the longer you stay there, the more you delay the chapter you actually deserve. Practically speaking, letting go means more than just physical distance. It's emotional detachment. It's not stalking their social media. It's not replaying old conversations in your head. It's catching yourself when you start to rewrite the past in a way that makes them look better than they really were. It's choosing reality over nostalgia, truth over fantasy. You'll know you've truly let go when you stop needing closure from them because you've given it to yourself. When you no longer wait for an apology that may never come. When you can think of them without bitterness, but also without longing. Here's what happens when you finally release them. You reclaim your time and mental space. You stop living in reaction to their moods and decisions. You discover new opportunities, friendships, and experiences that you couldn't see before. You rebuild your sense of self without their voice in your head. Letting go is an act of strength, not weakness. It's saying, I refuse to settle for being an option when I know I am a priority. And while it may hurt now, it's a short-term pain that protects you from a lifetime of disrespect and disappointment. The reality is, you can love someone deeply and still recognize they're not good for you. You can be grateful for what they taught you and still walk away. Self-love means knowing when to stop watering a dead plant. No matter how beautiful it once was, in the end, you'll see that the act of letting go isn't about losing them. It's about finding yourself again. And that's a trade worth making every single time. 6. How to silence your inner critic. What if I told you that the loudest, most damaging voice you'll ever hear in your life isn't from an enemy, a rival, or even someone who dislikes you? It's from you. That voice in your head that tells you you're not good enough, that you're going to fail, that you shouldn't even bother trying, that's your inner critic. And if you don't learn how to manage it, it will sabotage every step forward you try to take. The strange thing is, that inner critic often sounds like it's trying to help. It uses words like, be realistic, or don't embarrass yourself, or you're not ready yet. But underneath those phrases is fear. Fear of change, fear of risk, fear of stepping into the unknown. That voice convinces you to stay small, to play safe, to live in a box where nothing new can hurt you, but also where nothing new can grow you. The Stoics had a different approach. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength." Your inner critic is not an outside force. It's part of your mind. And if you have power over your mind, then you have power over it. The problem is, most of us never challenge it. We take its words as truth instead of opinion, forgetting that just because a thought appears doesn't mean it's valid. One of the most powerful steps you can take is learning to separate yourself from your thoughts. Imagine them as clouds passing in the sky. You're not the clouds, you're the sky itself. The critic may appear, but you don't have to hold on to it. You can watch it come and go without giving it the authority to define you. Silencing your inner critic doesn't mean pretending it's not there. In fact, trying to ignore it completely can make it louder. Instead, you confront it. You ask, is this thought actually true? Is there proof? Or is this just fear wearing the mask of logic? More often than not, you'll find that your critic's words collapse under the weight of evidence. Another technique is to replace self-criticism with self-instruction. Instead of telling yourself, I can't do this, shift to, I don't know how to do this yet, but I can learn. The critic shuts doors. Self-instruction opens them. It changes your focus from your limitations to your potential. It's also important to recognize where your inner critic learned its voice. Sometimes it's the echo of a parent's harsh words, a teacher's doubt, or a past failure that left a scar. When you understand its origins, you stop taking it so personally. You see it for what it is, a learned pattern, not an absolute truth. Self-love plays a huge role here. When you genuinely value yourself, you no longer accept being spoken to, even by your own mind, in ways you wouldn't tolerate from someone else. You start replacing that inner critic with an inner coach, someone who still points out where you can improve, but without tearing you down in the process. And here's the thing, your critic will never fully disappear. It's part of being human, but it can be trained. With time, practice, and conscious effort, you can turn its volume down so low that it becomes background noise instead of the main voice you hear. Practical steps to do this include journaling your thoughts to see patterns and challenge negative beliefs, practicing mindfulness so you can catch the critic's voice the moment it appears, surrounding yourself with people who speak to you with encouragement and truth so their voices start to outweigh the critic's, taking consistent action, because action proves the critic wrong more effectively than any argument. Remember this, your inner critic is not there to predict your future. It's there to protect your comfort zone. But comfort zones are where dreams go to die. Every time you silence that voice and move forward anyway, you're telling yourself, I am capable. I am worthy. I am allowed to take up space in this world. One day, you'll look back at the things you've accomplished and realize that the critic was never right. And in that moment, its power over you will shatter completely. Until then, keep showing up, keep speaking to yourself with strength, and keep proving that you are more than your doubts. 7. The role of self-care in building self-worth. When was the last time you truly took care of yourself, not just physically but mentally and emotionally? Not just eating when you're hungry or sleeping when you're tired, but actually treating yourself like someone worth protecting, worth investing in, worth loving. For too many people, self-care has been reduced to a marketing slogan, something you do on a spa day or when you feel burned out. But real self-care is so much deeper. It's not an occasional treat. It's a daily declaration of your worth. Here's the truth. You can't have genuine self-worth without self-care. The two are inseparable. When you consistently neglect your needs, you send yourself a quiet message. I'm not a priority. And over time, that message becomes your belief. You start to accept less from others because you've already accepted less from yourself. But when you consistently care for yourself, when you feed your body nourishing food, move it with intention, rest it fully, feed your mind with knowledge, and protect your emotions, you reinforce a different belief. I matter. My well-being matters. My life matters. The Stoics understood this principle, even if they didn't use the modern term self-care. Seneca wrote, "No man has the power to have everything he wants, but he has the power not to want what he has not, and cheerfully to employ what comes to him." In other words, caring for yourself isn't about indulging in everything you desire. It's about mastering the art of using what you have to strengthen your body, sharpen your mind, and steady your emotions. Real self-care isn't always glamorous. Sometimes it means going to bed earlier instead of scrolling through your phone until 2 a.m. Sometimes it's cooking a healthy meal instead of ordering fast food. Sometimes it's turning down an invitation because you need a night of quiet reflection. And sometimes it's having uncomfortable conversations that protect your mental space. One of the most powerful aspects of self-care is that it builds trust with yourself. Every time you make a choice that benefits your long-term well-being over short-term pleasure, you're showing yourself that you can be counted on. And self-trust is one of the deepest foundations of self-worth. You can't feel good about yourself if, deep down, you know you keep breaking promises to your own body, mind, and soul. Think of self-care as an investment account. Every healthy meal, every workout, every good night's sleep, every moment of journaling or meditation, these are deposits. They accumulate over time, compounding into confidence, resilience, and a quiet but unshakable sense of self-respect. And just like financial investments, neglect will drain the account faster than you realize. Skip enough deposits and you'll start feeling the cost. Not in dollars, but in your energy, your mood, and your self-image. Another thing to understand is that self-care isn't just about what you do. It's also about what you stop doing. Stop exposing yourself to toxic relationships that drain you. Stop overloading your schedule to the point where you can't breathe. Stop feeding your mind with constant negativity from news, gossip, or social media. This is where self-care overlaps with boundaries, because you can't truly care for yourself while letting everything and everyone invade your mental space. And here's the paradox. When you take care of yourself first, you actually have more to give to others. You can't pour from an empty cup. People who think self-care is selfish have it backwards. Neglecting yourself is what makes you unreliable, exhausted, and resentful. Loving yourself enough to rest, to recharge, and to say no when necessary makes you a stronger friend, partner, parent, and leader. Practical self-care doesn't require huge amounts of time or money. It requires consistency. 10 minutes of meditation a day is better than doing it once a month for an hour. Preparing one healthy meal is better than telling yourself you'll start next Monday forever. Taking a 20-minute walk in nature can do more for your mind than hours of mindless scrolling. Small, daily acts of self-respect add up in a way that one-off gestures never will. So ask yourself, if someone could see every decision you make about your health, your energy, your peace of mind, would they be able to tell that you love yourself? If the answer is no, then you know where to start. Self-care is not a reward for when you've earned it. It's the foundation that allows you to keep going, keep growing, and keep becoming the kind of person you admire. The moment you decide that your body is worth nourishing, your mind is worth protecting, and your heart is worth guarding, you step into a new level of self-worth. And once you've experienced that, you'll never again accept a life where you abandon yourself to please others. 8. Learning to enjoy your own company. When was the last time you were alone and actually enjoyed it? Not distracted by your phone, not numbing the silence with background noise, not rushing to fill the space with someone else's presence, but truly alone, at peace, and fully comfortable in your own skin. For many people, the idea of being alone feels uncomfortable, even frightening. They treat solitude like a punishment, something to escape from as quickly as possible. But the truth is, learning to enjoy your own company is one of the greatest forms of freedom you can ever experience. Here's why. When you depend on constant company or validation from others to feel okay, you've given away your emotional stability. You've made your peace conditional on something you can't control, the attention, approval, or presence of other people. But when you know how to be with yourself, to genuinely appreciate your own thoughts, your own activities, and your own presence, you take back that control. Your sense of happiness stops being tied to the actions of others. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "Nowhere you can go is more peaceful, more free of interruptions, than your own soul." The Stoics understood that the richest source of peace is not found in any physical location, but in the ability to be still with yourself. And yet, most of us fill every quiet moment with noise, because silence forces us to hear the truth about our habits, our fears, and our desires. But facing that truth is exactly how you grow. Enjoying your own company isn't about isolation. It's not about cutting off human connection or rejecting love and friendship. It's about removing the neediness that makes you cling to others out of fear, rather than choosing to be with them out of genuine desire. When you learn to be alone without feeling lonely, your relationships transform, because you no longer enter them from a place of lack. You stop asking people to fill the gaps in your self-worth. The process starts small. It might mean going for a walk without your headphones and simply listening to your thoughts. It might mean taking yourself out for a meal and resisting the urge to scroll endlessly on your phone. It could be spending an evening reading or journaling instead of defaulting to social media or mindless entertainment. At first, it might feel strange. That's okay. Growth always feels awkward before it feels natural. The key is to shift your perspective. Time alone isn't a void, it's a canvas. You can use it to reflect, to plan, to create, or simply to rest. You can use it to reconnect with hobbies or passions you've neglected. You can use it to process emotions without the influence of outside voices. And in doing so, you begin to see yourself not as someone who needs constant distraction, but as someone who can offer themselves genuine fulfillment. There's also a deeper psychological shift that happens when you enjoy your own company. You start to trust yourself more. Think about it. If you can't stand being alone with your own thoughts, how can you trust your own judgment? How can you rely on yourself when things get hard? By embracing solitude, you build that trust. You learn that you can handle your emotions, that you can solve problems on your own, and that you can be your own source of comfort. Another benefit is clarity. When you're constantly surrounded by noise, whether it's the literal noise of conversations and notifications, or the mental noise of other people's opinions, it's almost impossible to hear your own inner voice. But in solitude, the static fades. You can see your life more clearly. You can identify what you actually want versus what you've been told to want. And that clarity makes you stronger, more decisive, and far less vulnerable to manipulation. Self-love and solitude are deeply connected. The more you value yourself, the more you'll value your alone time. And the more you value your alone time, the less you'll tolerate situations that drain your energy. It becomes a cycle of empowerment, and once it starts, it's hard to stop. If being alone still scares you, start asking yourself why. Is it because you don't like your own thoughts? Is it because you've attached your identity so tightly to others that you're not sure who you are without them? Or is it because you've never been taught that your own presence is enough? Whatever the reason, know that it can be unlearned and replaced with a quiet confidence that comes from being your own best friend. Here's the ultimate truth. If you can learn to enjoy your own company, you'll never be truly lonely again. People may come and go, circumstances may change, but you'll always have a steady, reliable source of peace within yourself. And that's a power no one can take from you. 9. Releasing the need for external validation. Why do we let the opinions of others have so much power over us? Why does one compliment make our day, yet one criticism can ruin our week? If you've ever found yourself replaying someone's negative comment in your head, or constantly checking your phone to see who liked your post, you already know the trap of external validation. It feels good in the moment, like a quick hit of dopamine, but it also makes you dependent, and dependency is weakness. Here's the harsh truth. If your self-worth is built on the approval of others, you're building your house on sand. The moment their opinions change, and they will, your confidence crumbles. One day they'll love you. The next they'll criticize you, and your emotional state will swing with their moods. That's not freedom. That's emotional slavery. The Stoics understood this danger thousands of years ago. Epictetus said, "If you wish to be free, do not concern yourself with what others think of you. This isn't about arrogance or pretending you don't care. It's about recognizing that other people's opinions are just that. Opinions. They're shaped by their experiences, biases, moods, and even insecurities. And none of those things have the authority to define your worth. When you live for external validation, you're handing over the keys to your happiness. You're essentially telling the world, you get to decide how I feel about myself. That's a dangerous bargain because most people are too distracted with their own struggles to truly see you for who you are. They see fragments. They see what's convenient for them to see. And sometimes they project their own fears and failures onto you. The first step in releasing the need for external validation is to identify where it shows up in your life. Maybe it's in the way you dress. Not because it makes you feel confident, but because you're chasing compliments. Maybe it's in the career path you chose, because it sounded impressive to others, even if it left you empty. Maybe it's in how you filter your words and your personality, afraid of being judged. Once you recognize these patterns, you can begin replacing them with self-generated validation. This means measuring your worth by your own standards, by the promises you keep to yourself, by the skills you build, by the values you live by. It's the difference between saying, "I feel good because they like me," and "I feel good because I lived with integrity today." One powerful exercise is to detach your actions from their reception. If you create something, a piece of art, a project at work, a personal goal, ask yourself, "Would I still be proud of this if no one ever saw it?" If the answer is yes, you're on the right track. You're doing it for you, not for applause. There's also an emotional benefit to breaking free from this need: stability. When your confidence is internal, it's not shaken by criticism or inflated by praise. You can receive feedback without letting it define you. You can hear no without collapsing. You can celebrate yes without becoming addicted to it. You stay centered, calm in success, calm in failure. Of course, it's not about ignoring others completely. Healthy feedback is valuable. We learn and grow from perspectives outside our own. But there's a big difference between considering someone's opinion and depending on it to feel worthy. You should be able to weigh advice against your own principles, not swallow it whole just because you fear disapproval. Releasing the need for external validation also makes your relationships stronger. When you don't need someone to constantly reassure you, you remove pressure from the connection. People can enjoy your company without feeling like they're responsible for holding up your self-esteem. And you, in turn, can be more present, more authentic, because you're not performing for their approval. The real shift happens when you start trusting your own voice more than the noise around you. That doesn't mean you'll never care what anyone thinks. We're human, we all want to be liked. But it means that your sense of worth won't rise and fall like a stock price based on other people's reactions. You'll still value connection, but you won't be enslaved by it. The truth is, external validation will always be unstable because people are unstable. Their moods change, their tastes change, their attention wanders. If you build your identity on that, you'll spend your life chasing something that can never be held. But if you build it on your own standards, your own effort, your own growth, it becomes unshakable. So ask yourself, if no one ever clapped for you again, would you still do what you're doing? Would you still chase your dreams, live by your values, and fight for your goals? If the answer is no, it's time to reframe your motivation. Because the only applause that truly matters is the one you give yourself when you know you've lived a day in full alignment with who you want to be. 10. How to forgive yourself and move forward. How many nights have you stayed awake replaying your mistakes like a broken record? How many times have you whispered to yourself, "If only I could go back and do it differently"? We all carry moments we wish we could erase. Things we said in anger, opportunities we didn't take, choices we made from fear instead of courage. And yet, no matter how much we wish it, the past doesn't change. It's carved in stone. What we can change is how we relate to it. Self-forgiveness is one of the hardest skills to master, not because it's complicated, but because it requires facing yourself without excuses. It means looking directly at your flaws, your failures, and your regrets. Not to punish yourself further, but to release yourself from the prison of constant self-judgment. The Stoics understood this deeply. Seneca once wrote that the greatest obstacle to living is the expectation of tomorrow. When you spend your life trapped in yesterday's mistakes, you rob yourself of today's potential. The truth is, holding on to guilt feels productive in a strange way. We tell ourselves that by feeling bad, we're somehow paying for what we did. But guilt doesn't fix the past. It doesn't undo the harm. All it does is chain us to a moment that no longer exists. Forgiveness, on the other hand, is not about pretending the mistake didn't happen. It's about learning the lesson so deeply that you never need to repeat it. Forgiving yourself starts with honesty. No sugarcoating, no mental gymnastics to make yourself the hero of the story. You acknowledge the wrong, you accept your role in it, and you face the discomfort head on. This is not weakness, it's courage. Most people run from this step because it's painful. But pain is the doorway to growth. By taking full responsibility, you remove the need to hide from yourself. Once you've acknowledged the truth, the next step is self-compassion. And this isn't just some feel-good concept. It's a practical necessity. Think about it. If you're constantly berating yourself, how can you expect to have the energy or clarity to do better? You wouldn't tell a friend you're a complete failure every day and expect them to thrive. Yet we do this to ourselves without realizing the damage it causes. Self-compassion means speaking to yourself as you would to someone you deeply care about, someone who's trying, learning, and worthy of a second chance. The Stoics would also remind us that mistakes are part of the human condition. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "When you wake up in the morning, tell yourself, the people I deal with today will be meddling, ungrateful, arrogant. And they are like this because they cannot tell good from evil." He was talking about others, but the same applies inwardly. We too make errors because we are still learning. If you can extend understanding to strangers, why deny it to yourself? Forgiveness also requires action. If your mistake hurt someone else, make amends where possible. Apologize sincerely, not to erase your guilt, but to honor the other person's experience. If the harm can't be undone, commit to different choices moving forward. This transforms forgiveness from a passive feeling into an active principle in your life. Perhaps the hardest part is letting go of the identity that your mistake gave you. Sometimes we hold on to guilt because it becomes familiar. We start to define ourselves by the failure. I'm the person who ruined that relationship. I'm the one who wasted those years. But you are not a single event. You are a collection of choices, actions, and moments, and you are still writing the story. The past chapter is over. The pen is still in your hand. When you finally release the weight of self-condemnation, you open space for possibility. You can focus on building instead of constantly repairing. You can take risks again because you no longer believe that one misstep defines your worth. And most importantly, you can be present. Self-forgiveness isn't about erasing your past. It's about no longer letting it own you. So ask yourself, if a friend you love made the same mistake you did, and they were genuinely trying to grow, would you tell them to live in shame forever? Or would you urge them to stand up, take what they've learned, and move forward with strength? That's exactly what you owe yourself. Not denial, not forgetting, but the grace to keep going. The moment you choose to forgive yourself, you reclaim your power. You stop being defined by what you did and start being defined by what you choose to do next. And that is the truest form of freedom. 11. Building confidence through consistent action. What if I told you that confidence isn't something you're born with, and it's not something you magically find one day? What if it's something you build, brick by brick, through the small, sometimes boring actions you take every single day? The truth is, the people you admire for their confidence aren't fearless superheroes. They're just people who have stacked enough proof over time that they can trust themselves to show up and do the work. The problem is, most people wait for confidence before they act. They think, once I feel ready, I'll go for it. But that's not how it works. You don't act because you feel confident. You feel confident because you acted. Confidence is the side effect of keeping promises to yourself. Every time you say, I'm going to do this, and then follow through, you place another brick in the foundation of your self-belief. Think about it like this. Each action you take is a vote for the kind of person you want to become. When you avoid challenges, procrastinate, or break your own commitments, you cast a vote for doubt. But when you step forward, even in discomfort, you cast a vote for confidence. And over time, the majority wins. Your identity shifts. You no longer see yourself as someone who tries. You see yourself as someone who does. The Stoics understood this intimately. Epictetus taught that if you wish to improve, you must be content to be thought foolish and stupid by others. Why? Because growth requires action, and action often invites judgment. You cannot build confidence if your main concern is how you look to others. You build it by focusing on the act itself, not the approval it brings. Consistency is the secret ingredient. Anyone can take action once, but confidence comes from knowing you can repeat that action again and again, even when motivation fades. It's easy to feel powerful on a good day. It's the days when you're tired, when the world feels heavy, when you'd rather hide. Those are the days when following through matters most. Because if you can keep your word in the storm, you'll never doubt yourself in the sunshine. Let's be clear. Building confidence doesn't mean succeeding at everything you try. In fact, some of your most powerful growth will come from failing and realizing you can survive it. Every time you get back up after a setback, you reinforce the belief that you are resilient. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "If you are distressed by anything external, the pain is not due to the thing itself, but to your estimate of it." Apply that to failure. The event itself doesn't define you, but the meaning you assign to it does. See failure as training, not a verdict, and your confidence will become unshakable. Practical steps help too. Start with small, manageable actions and scale up. If you've broken trust with yourself in the past, begin by setting micro-promises you can keep. Wake up at the time you said you would. Finish the task you've been avoiding. Show up to the gym for just 20 minutes. These small wins matter because they prove to your brain that you're reliable, and reliability is the root of confidence. Also, keep your focus internal. Don't measure your worth by likes, applause, or external praise. These are unstable foundations. True confidence comes from knowing, deep in your bones, I did what I said I would do, regardless of whether anyone noticed. And here's the irony. When you build confidence from the inside out, others will notice. People are drawn to those who move with certainty, who don't seek permission to exist. But by the time that happens, you won't be chasing their validation. You'll already have your own. So ask yourself today, what's one action you've been avoiding because you don't feel ready? And what would happen if you did it before you felt confident? If you commit to repeating that process, you won't need to find confidence ever again. You'll become it. Confidence isn't a gift you wait for, it's a muscle you train. And every rep you put in, no matter how small, makes you stronger. Build it through consistent action, and it will carry you further than you ever imagined. 12. Practicing gratitude for who you are. When was the last time you stopped, not to wish for what you don't have, but to acknowledge what you already are? We live in a world that trains us to see what's missing. Social media, advertising, even casual conversations. They all remind you of the gap between where you are and where you think you should be. And while growth is important, here's the paradox. You'll never feel truly fulfilled until you learn to be deeply grateful for yourself, exactly as you are right now. Gratitude for who you are is not about pretending you're perfect. It's about seeing your worth without needing to earn it. It's about recognizing the battles you've fought, the storms you've survived, the values you've kept intact when it would have been easier to let them go. It's easy to appreciate others, their talents, their beauty, their achievements. But how often do you pause and appreciate yourself with the same enthusiasm? Seneca once wrote, "It is not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more, that is poor." Apply this to yourself. The poorest version of you is the one who can't see your own value unless it's validated by someone else. The richest version is the one who can stand alone, look at your reflection and say, "I am enough, not because I've done everything I dreamed of, but because I've already proven my strength just by being here." Gratitude for yourself changes the way you live. Without it, you approach life from a place of lack, always chasing, always comparing, always feeling behind. With it, you approach life from a place of abundance. Not because you have everything, but because you are everything you need to begin. And from that foundation, growth becomes a choice, not a desperate attempt to fill a void. Start with the simple act of acknowledgement. Write down three things you appreciate about yourself every morning. Not just physical traits or skills, but qualities of character. Maybe it's your ability to keep going when things get hard. Maybe it's your loyalty to the people you love. Maybe it's the fact that, no matter how many times life has knocked you down, you've always found a way to get back up. These reminders are not vanity. They're fuel. They strengthen the voice inside you that says, "I am worthy," and quiet the one that says, "I am not enough." Gratitude for who you are also teaches you to separate your identity from your mistakes. Too often, people define themselves by their worst moments, replaying regrets until they become part of their self-image. But you're not a single bad decision, just as a tree is not defined by one dead branch. Gratitude shifts your focus to the growth, not the scars. The Stoics understood the power of perspective. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself daily to see the good that already existed, not to be consumed by what was absent. This isn't complacency, it's clarity. You can pursue improvement without despising your current self. In fact, self-improvement becomes far more effective when it's built on self-respect rather than self-loathing. There's another benefit. When you're grateful for who you are, you stop being easily shaken by outside judgment. Criticism still comes, but it doesn't penetrate as deeply because your sense of self-worth isn't up for negotiation. You know your strengths, you acknowledge your weaknesses, and you hold both without shame. This is emotional resilience at its finest. Of course, this takes practice. We're conditioned to focus on the negative, on the 10 things we dislike, rather than the 100 things we've done right. Gratitude reverses that lens. And the more you practice, the more natural it becomes. Soon, you'll catch yourself pausing in moments of quiet and thinking, "I'm proud of who I'm becoming." That's when you know the shift is real. So today, instead of measuring yourself against someone else's highlight reel, measure yourself against the person you used to be. Look at the growth, however small. Appreciate the resilience, however unnoticed. Celebrate the small victories that no one clapped for, but still mattered. Because here's the truth. You will never love yourself if you are always postponing that love until you become better. The practice of gratitude teaches you to love yourself now, in progress, in motion, in imperfection. And that love will become the foundation for every other success you build. At the end of the day, everything we've talked about comes down to one truth. The world will treat you the way you treat yourself. If you ignore your needs, so will they. If you cross your own boundaries, they will too. But if you set the standard, protect your energy, and choose to value yourself above all else, you teach the world exactly how you deserve to be treated. Loving yourself more than anyone else doesn't mean you stop loving others. It means you finally love from a place of strength instead of desperation. It means you no longer chase approval or cling to people who drain you. It means your happiness is built on a foundation no one can shake, because it comes from within. The Stoics knew that self-respect was the core of freedom. Epictetus said, "No man is free who is not master of himself." And mastery begins with self-love, the kind that's disciplined, unwavering, and rooted in gratitude for who you already are. So here's my challenge for you. Starting today, stop waiting for permission to love yourself. Stop putting it off until you lose the weight, land the job, or find the relationship. Love yourself now, in the middle of the chaos, with the imperfections, with the scars. Because when you do, every goal you chase and every relationship you build will come from a place of abundance, not emptiness. And remember, the relationship you have with yourself sets the tone for every other connection in your life. Treat yourself like someone you are proud to know. Protect yourself like someone you deeply care about. And invest in yourself like someone you believe in completely. That's not arrogance. That's alignment. Now it's your turn to live it.